are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
4 seconds left. He's got the ball. He should have it. Isaiah hangs on the ball, flips it up to the Raptors. Detroit is the city of champions again.
Detroit basketball.
What's happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Tuesday, December the 31st, and the last Locked On Pistons podcast of the decade. Don't be a decade truther. This is your boy, Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, a sports writer here in Detroit City covering the NBA for the Detroit News and Associated Press, a Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for all your support over this past year and then some with the Locked On Pistons podcast. And like I said, don't be a decade truther. I know there was no year zero, so the 10th year would technically be 2020. But no, the 2020s don't start in 2021. So ignore the no year zero technicality and join us in common sense land here in the rest of the world. Today we're going to run down Monday night's loss against the Utah Jazz. Can you believe it? The Pistons lost one. We're also going to give you the three takeaways from Monday night's game and look ahead to Thursday against the Los Angeles Clippers. I'm thinking we're going to take the 2 days off here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, enjoy ourselves. Maybe I'll catch up with some sleep starting this podcast here on 12:20 in the morning. Another long day for your boy at locker room cleanout day for the Detroit Pistons. I'll be at the Great Lakes Invitational tomorrow for the finals at Little Caesars Arena. Michigan Tech is in that final. We're checking out some college hockey on New Year's Eve. I'll be on the blog for Michigan-Alabama for the Citrus Bowl, 1 o'clock on Wednesday afternoon, so join us at DetNews.com for that. Very excited to be working over the next couple of days. Actually, I'm always excited to work whenever I'm asked to work, and always take that money. Don't want to ever turn down jobs. You know how it is. The grind of the freelancer. I'm really happy that I've been able to work full-time as a freelancer. Haven't had to pick up those odd jobs or anything like that. So dreams are being fulfilled here for your boy on the Locked On Pistons podcast. And thanks to all you guys, because it helps when you spread the word, when you visit the sponsors, when you do all the things that I require you to do as a listener of Locked On Pistons podcast. Do all that stuff. Tell them where you sent them. Send some more sponsors, local sponsors our way that want to get interested in being involved and being a business partner with the Locked On Pistons podcast. Real cheap advertising, and we'll send the loyal fans your way as well. But speaking of loyal fans, give me a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore. After that, also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons Dash. Matt Shook. But the Pistons lose 104-81 to the Utah Jazz on Monday night in Salt Lake City, falling to 0-2 on the six-game roadie, something like lost 7 of 8 now at this point. I think that sounds right. Five-game losing streak, a win, and then two losses. Sounds like 7 of 8 to me. This was a game on Monday night that the Pistons led 40-39 at halftime. A little bit of a throwback score-wise there. Had us thinking about the last decade of Pistons basketball. And I'm kind of surprised that you don't see more of that just kind of randomly. Some random low scores more often in the NBA. I will credit the Pistons' defense for playing well in the first half, but it feels like, you know, sometimes teams could really just shoot poorly, and sometimes you'll have games that are closer to 95-90 or something like that. I'm not talking about crazy low going-to-work Pistons scores, but it's just kind of strange that the offense has gotten so efficient, the shooting has gotten so good that every game is like it's crazy when you don't get 100 points here in the NBA. But the Pistons were far away from that with 81. I just remember that the Pistons, that they just are so bad in Utah, always have been. And the fact that they went cold and hit 81 points doesn't surprise me. But even when the Pistons were leading early in this one, it just felt like a house of cards in the first half, and it would fall at any time. I had no illusions that they were going to win this game, as I'm sure many of you didn't as well, even though they played well throughout times of the first half, and we were all proven right about that. Of course, the biggest obstacle in this one was the injuries. Not an excuse for a whole season, but certainly is a factor night in and night out and with the whole season as well. Doesn't mean you need to not make directional changes in your plan for the franchise, but the Pistons do have all sorts of injuries. They fall to 12-22 with the loss. A new low watermark of the season. Hurrah! 10 games under 500 as we go into the new year. wrapping up the 2019 portion of the season. That's the best news of the night. 2019 is over for the Detroit Pistons the entire decade as well. We did some all-decade stuff in the offseason, so that's why I'm giving myself a pass on not doing some more of that feature type of stuff here now. Standings-wise, Pistons fall to 11th place alone in the Eastern Conference. Still just 2.5 games behind the Orlando Magic if you're looking for something to be thankful for heading into the new year. Of course, two teams in between them, Charlotte and Chicago, the Pistons would have to jump on the way to Orlando if they were ever to have designs of doing something like that. 4-for-14 from three-point land is strange for the Pistons. Obviously, Luke Kennard being out and Blake Griffin, a couple of volume three-point shooters, impacts that. Langston Galloway, for some reason, only plays 19 minutes. He goes 0-for-3 from three. I don't know. I just feel like we've seen the best of Langston, and the trade value will only go down from here on out. But 20 points and 4 assists from Derrick Rose. Speaking of good trade value, he's been strong all season, was really good at times in the second quarter, and played well in his limited minutes, as he always does for the Pistons. 15 for Svi Mykhailiuk, a quiet 15, 3 of 7 from 3. Don't think he played particularly well. Andre Drummond, I thought this was a pretty rough game for him. I know that there's the defenders out there doing all they can on Twitter to make it sound like Andre Drummond's a world beater. Certainly he's not the biggest reason the Pistons lost this game, no doubt about that, but not a good game for him. 15 and 13, all sorts of other good and bad numbers, as we expect from Andre Drummond, the roller coaster of looking across his stat line in a box score. But 5 of 16 from the field is the one that stands out there. That's horrendous. Obviously outplayed by Rudy Gobert in this one, and 11 points and 9 rebounds from Christian Wood off the bench, a strong game from him. The Jazz just came out and dominated early in the third quarter. Pistons went cold, outscored the Pistons 28-19 in the third quarter as a whole, but it was worse than that in the first half of the third quarter. And the Jazz made it happen, as you would expect, against the lowly Detroit Pistons. Donovan Mitchell, always a harsh reminder of Pistons fans who remember the draft history. A quiet 23 points from him, but effective, obviously. I don't think the Jazz played particularly well. They didn't seem to have any kind of energy and coasted to a win against the Pistons, because that's what you do against bad teams. But, yeah, you don't have to play too hard when beating up the Pistons these days. It's a non-competitive team that the Pistons are fielding right now, and it's sad. It's sad. 17 for Bogdanovich and the Jazz, 13 and 19 for Rudy Gobert. In a strong game for him, but up next we are going to be talking about the three takeaways from Monday night's game. Yes, I've got three. That's coming up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast.
Yes, sir!
All right, a little bit later on we will talk Los Angeles Clippers. That's right. The Pistons are going to be playing one of the more entertaining and one of the best teams in the league on Thursday night. We're going to preview that one now because we've got the New Year holiday coming up and your boy's going to take a couple of days off. Let's do three takeaways from Monday night's loss to the Utah Jazz. And the third is one of my favorite stats. The Pistons are now 1-10 against good teams throughout the NBA. That's two losses to the Sixers, two losses to the Raptors, two losses to the Milwaukee Bucks, one loss apiece to Miami, Dallas, and Boston, and also now the Utah Jazz. And then the one win against the Houston Rockets without Russell Westbrook in the lineup for that one. Pistons had all sorts of injuries that night too. So kudos to the Pistons for their one win on the road, no less, against one good team that they've beaten so far this year, which wouldn't be so bad. It's a bad thing, but wouldn't be so bad if the Pistons weren't also 5-10 against bad teams. Now look ahead to the schedule here. I'm counting the next 12 games up against either a really good team or a really bad team. So chances to up both of those records in the next 12 games. And even better news is of those 12 games, three are only against really good teams and nine against really bad teams. The bad news is two of the next three are against bad teams, so it could be a little bit of a tough stretch here. Clippers Thursday, Warriors on Saturday, Lakers on Sunday before eight of nine of the next games are against bad teams the Pistons could beat. Not should beat, because the Pistons are bad too, but we're talking about the Cavs on Tuesday, the Cavs at home on Thursday in the second half of a home-and-home, and then games against Chicago, New Orleans, the one good team in Boston in this stretch, and then back to bad with Atlanta, who's really, really bad, Washington, Sacramento, and Memphis. So there's some chances to up this record a little bit, get away from this low watermark of 10 games below 500. How about this as a bold prediction? They'll hit 11 games under 500 after this loss, and then beat the Warriors, and then lose to the Lakers, go back to 11 games under 500, and then beat the Cavs, and they will not go below that low water mark of 11 games under 500 for a while, although they might make some trades and kind of tank the end of the season and go back under that. as the spring approaches, but it will be a while if it ever happens. So better days to come, no doubt about that. Second biggest takeaway from this one, I tweeted something to the effect of, I hope that there's a smart general manager, maybe two or three smart general managers out there that are watching Derrick Rose and preparing to put together a nice little offer. Former host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, Duncan Smith, one of the deans of Pistons Twitter, one of the smartest guys out there, said he replied saying, yeah, it'll be like a mid or maybe possibly high second round pick. And I know that's kind of the consensus going into trade season here. I do think that there is a little bit of smart guy Twitter out there, and I don't say that derisively, I say that respectfully, about Duncan Smith and some of the other NBA Twitter, big minds out there, that is of a conservative nature when it comes to trades, when it comes to moves that front offices should make. It's like they always kind of guess on the low end of things, that the more conservative, the more practical approaches for front offices. I feel like kind of going into every trade season, there's a lot of names, smart guys on NBA Twitter. They're always like, this one's going to be a little bit of a slow trade season coming in. Values are going to be down. To me, watching Jordan Clarkson on Monday night for Utah and seeing that they got 2 second-round picks and Dante Exum, and I know that, whatever your perception of Dante Exum is, certainly he's a guy for the Jazz who's probably not going to get much time. They can't wait for him to develop as they're a pretty good team right now and need some more production off the bench. But the team like the Cavs obviously see him as a positive, and a team like the Pistons would see that type of player as a positive as well. So what Duncan's talking about with a single mid to possibly early second round pick, I'm seeing a package for Jordan Clarkson, who is a lesser player than Derrick Rose, fetching multiple second round picks and a useful player. Now, again, not certainly useful for Utah, but the type of player that might be useful in a rebuild situation for the Pistons to see what they could possibly get out of him. So to me, I disagree. I think that the good teams out there, they're going to look at their bench, they're going to look at their backup point guards, and they're going to look at a very affordable contract. They're also going to look at their cap sheets this summer, not seeing a lot of ways for their teams to improve this summer based on the open market, free agents that might be out there, their own struggling cap sheets, and look at Derrick Rose's affordable contract at $15 million over these two seasons as an asset to the Pistons. Expiring contracts are good, but only when there's players out there that could be had in free agency, or better than expiring contracts are affordable players who are under contract for more than the rest of this season. So I think Derrick Rose, the fact that he's not an expiring contract, makes him more valuable than a Langston Galloway, because Derrick has his more affordable deal cap number. Obviously, any kind of injury that happens to Derrick Rose from now until February 7th changes the calculus to this. But I'm looking at the back half of the first round, and I'm thinking about teams that could really use a bench upgrade, and really don't have a lot of need in some cases for more young players. I'm looking at Philadelphia. We've talked about this ad nauseum, the Oklahoma City protected pick that could convey and should probably convey into 2 second-round picks, assuming that Oklahoma City doesn't have a great second half to the season here. That's something that would be more useful than a single second-round pick. So that Oklahoma City pick is a valuable asset for there, in addition to a possible like a Zaire Smith or something like that coming over instead of that pick. I'm looking at Brooklyn having Philadelphia's first-round pick this year. They need some help in the playoffs, a team that could use a little boost. Looking at possibly Kyrie returning, boosting the bench a little bit. Could Derrick Rose help with Kevin Durant coming in next year? Or could a team like that acquires Derrick Rose for a little bit of a playoff push this year, then trade Derrick Rose this summer if they think that, Spencer Dinwiddie and the other guys that they have in that backcourt makes it not reasonable to add Derrick Rose to the mix going into next season with Kevin Durant obviously needing the ball in his hand there. I'm looking at Milwaukee that acquired Indiana's pick in the Malcolm Brogdon sign and trade. What helps Milwaukee more for their franchise? The 19th pick in a weak draft next year, or Derrick Rose for 2 years when they're trying to convince Giannis Antetokounmpo to stay here in these next few seasons? So I think that that's a place that could look to upgrade their bench with Derrick Rose, the Milwaukee Bucks, a trade partner for the Pistons in the past. Now, if you're telling me that Derrick Rose can only fetch a second-round pick, then, well, what about, John Luehr? And I know that that's a different type of contract situation because the Milwaukee Bucks were trying to get off of next year's Stoney Snell deal. But there are other examples out there. Why did Reggie Bullock, who's on an expiring deal, And I know expiring was a little bit more valuable last year because the Lakers had big plans for this past offseason, which obviously came to fruition. But, you know, Reggie Bullock, with two months left on his deal, goes ahead and fetches Svi Mykhailiuk and a second-round pick. Svi Mykhailiuk was a second-round pick himself and a rookie, but that draft was so loaded that a second-round pick in that draft, and Svi Mykhailiuk being that player, seems like more of a late first-round pick value-wise compared to this year. So not exactly apples and oranges when comparing – it is apples and oranges in some ways when comparing those particular drafts and particular trades. But how about the Lakers themselves? Once again, the Clippers themselves, both of those teams have their first-round picks this year. I think they're both in play. How about this? KCP for Rose. And we'll take a future second off your hands. Who says no to that one? Probably them, because KCP's a little bit useful for them. But how about another former Piston? Avery Bradley, a little bit less useful than KCP at this point. We'll take Avery Bradley off your hands and a first for Derrick Rose. That sounds like a reasonable one to me. Jerome Robinson of the Clippers is a name that's out there. We'll take Jerome Robinson in a second for Derrick Rose. The irony, because you basically get the pick back from the Blake trade. I know that pick wasn't exactly Jerome Robinson, but one of the two players that the Clippers got on draft nights with their two picks that they had, with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander being the other player that they ended up getting in the Miles Bridges trade. How about Rodney Magruder and your first-round pick to match that salary? We'll take that off your hands as well. Boston, that's a team that has their own first-round pick, and also Milwaukee's and Memphis's. Two late first-round picks, and then the Memphis pick, assuming it conveys. Obviously, the lottery could shake things up a little bit with some of the protections. But does Boston need to fit three more rookies onto this roster next year, or can they give one up to have Derrick Rose take over Brad Wanamaker's minutes this year? We'll take the big 26-year-old French center, Poirier, match some salaries, and take the middle of their first-round pick, something like that, or maybe just match the salaries, take the pick off their hands. You know, Danny Ainge should be commended for the work he's done with the Boston front office, but they have all these assets, they have all these picks in a weak draft, by the way, and now they don't really have a need for more developmental type of players when they're trying to get good this year and next year before they, you know, maybe see how things go down the line. So it's a team that doesn't have a lot of, Jason Tatum's and Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown already got the extension. Jason Tatum's going to get paid pretty soon. They need to start replenishing some of those young players, but they don't need all these middling late first-round picks. I think that they're a team that needs to win now more than adding marginal type of young talent to their roster. So those are just some ideas, just spitballing a little bit here as some teams that I think might be willing to give up a first-round pick in a deal for Derrick Rose, who's playing so well for the Pistons and is a player that obviously can help teams down the stretch of the season and into the playoffs, his health obviously being a huge question there. And the first biggest takeaway from Monday night is Andre Drummond. It's my show, so I'm going to kind of give this one a run. I threw it out there on Twitter a couple times. No one bit. No likes, no retweets. Made me sad. But everyone talks about stocks. Steals plus blocks are stocks. It's a counting number, which really favors Andre Drummond. He's for a big man especially, great at the steals and good at blocks as well. So when you add the steals and blocks together, it's a way of helping out his value and making him sound like he's a very good player. He is a good player. So obviously it's one of the stats in his favor. But I want to talk about the turnovers, the fouls and the turnovers. It's a glaring thing for him night in and night out. And that's my biggest takeaway, is I want to get the turnovers going as my kind of joke. Nobody laughed at my joke. It made me a little bit sad. But 37 minutes for Andre Drummond, 5 of 16 from the field, 5 of 8 from the free throw line, 3 offensive rebounds, 10 defensive rebounds for 13 total ones, 3 assists, 5 steals, 3 blocks, 7 turnovers, 5 fouls, and a minus 19. That is a roller coaster of a stat line. That is so up and down as you're going and you're reading that from left to right. Just an unbelievable stat line for him if you're an Andre Drummond guy, you can take that stat line and show how valuable he is, how great of a player he is. But at the same time, if you're trying to be that anti-Andre Drummond guy, which I know a lot of you guys are, you can easily twist that around to make it fit your argument that this guy's garbage and he doesn't deserve $30 million and just let him walk and whatever else your argument would be. You add together the steals and the blocks, 8 of them. That's unbelievable. That's a great game by any measurement. But at the same time, my turnover stats, adding together the turnovers and the fouls, 12 of them is equally as impressive or unimpressive as the stocks are impressive. So just more fun with Andre Drummond's stats, and you can have it fit whatever narrative you want. And that's the beauty of being a Pistons fan these days, the most polarizing player on this team, the most polarizing player of this decade, and a puzzle that the Pistons will have to figure out and solve the exit or the continuation of the Andre Drummond era here in Detroit if they're ever going to want to make the 2020s better than the 2010s. That's the big question. But up next, we're going to talk about the Clippers, speaking of a team that should have a good 2020s after a solid 2010s. That's next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, which is a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team every day. All right, and a couple things from the last segment that I wanted to make clear. If the offers that are out there are basically just Derrick Rose for a second-round pick, obviously you need to match salaries somehow, but when we're talking about salaries, if it's just a neutral salary type of guy, I don't consider like an expiring deal to be that valuable for the Pistons this summer if it's at the $6 to $8 million range. It's a little bit of a positive asset because you do get a little bit further away from the luxury tax line, and that's a good thing. But if we're just talking about the not a young player that could turn into something and not a useful veteran that's under contract for another year, if we're talking about like the most vanilla, neutral salary type of situation, and that only like positive asset that's coming in is a mid to early second round pick for Derrick Rose, I think the Pistons should not do that. They should not make that deal at the deadline. Hold on to Derrick Rose and see what the market is like for him this summer. I will come onto this show after that trade and tell you that's a horrible move by the Pistons if all they get is the equivalent of a mid to early second round pick in terms of just for Derrick Rose. So I don't think they should do that. Just for the record, want to put that on wax here. I also want to clean up that I talked about the Lakers and like an Avery Bradley and a first for Derrick Rose. The Lakers cannot trade their first round pick for next year because they've already traded the 2021 deal to New Orleans and the Anthony Davis deal. So you got the Stepien rule. You can't trade multiple future first-round draft picks that are in consecutive years. So can't do that. But, you know, maybe there's a way for them to acquire a first-round pick before they do that to make it happen. Maybe there's a three-way deal that can work in there in some kind of way. But we could take a couple seconds from them or something like that in a package if they're really wanting Derrick Rose out there. But let's talk Tinseltown. The Clippers on Thursday hosting the Pistons there. They are 23-11, third seed out west. Not, you know, they're not in the upper echelon in terms of the standings right now. The Lakers are up there, and also the Clippers are looking up at the Denver Nuggets, who, as I tape this on early Tuesday morning, are a game ahead of the Clippers for the second spot in the Western Conference as well. The Clippers are playing a day game today at Sacramento on New Year's Eve, so a rest advantage for Detroit, who will be getting into LAX tonight to rest up and enjoy the New Year's in L.A. Hey, not that bad, right? You don't have a game on January 1st, so it should be a nice little night to go out and relax in Los Angeles for the Detroit Pistons. Didn't even think about that. A nice little bonus in the schedule for the Pistons there. Los Angeles on New Year's Eve, not so bad. I'm guessing a guy like Blake Griffin might enjoy being back in Los Angeles for New Year's Eve, especially if he might not even be able to be playing on Thursday anyway. So enjoy it, Blake. Have a good time. 2020, a happy new year to you. But Pat Beverly, speaking of guys who might be enjoying their New Year's Eve as well, he's out a couple of weeks too, so that helps the Pistons cause on Thursday night. Really and honestly, the Clippers aren't great right now. I know they had the big win on Christmas night against the Lakers. It's something that kind of changes the narrative. But in factual world, they're only a 500 team over their last eight games, entering today's game against the Kings. And that's including losses to the Chicago Bulls and the Oklahoma City Thunder lately as well. But we know about the Clippers. They're clearly going to be beating the Pistons and certainly favored to beat the Pistons. But there is a world that the Pistons can put it all together and win this game. If Blake Griffin is healthy, of course, it's another return game for Blake against the Clippers. That's something that gets him going, as you would imagine. But Kawhi Leonard comes over. Paul George comes over. They still got Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell. Interesting things about Montrez and Lou is that those guys are both big competition for Derrick Rose in the sixth man of the year competitions there. Zubac starts at center. They got Landry Shamet and the Tobias Harris trade as well. Some bit players there in Jamichael Green, Patrick Patterson, and Mo Harkless. Three guys that I've kind of always liked throughout their career. I mean, they've got solid players. Everyone in their role for the LA Clippers is a good version of that. Kawhi Leonard is a good version of the best player on your team, a very good version of the best player on your team. Paul George is an excellent version of the second best player on your team. Lou Williams is a great version of a bench scorer on your team, the best version of a bench scorer. Montrezl Harrell is the best version of bench energy that you could possibly have in the league. Zubac, as far as a role-playing center, you could probably upgrade that a little bit, but beggars can't be choosers. Shamet is a nice guy to develop. Green, Patterson. Patterson makes the threes. Harkless defends. Beverly, when he's healthy, obviously one of the best defensive guards of all time. But for Pistons fans, in addition to getting your butt kicked by Doc Rivers and the Clippers, keep your eye on Jerome Robinson. We talked about him last segment. Let me know what you think. Possible trade candidate for the Pistons there on Derrick Rose or possibly even Langston Galloway. Boston College, combo guard, second year, tall guy. Hasn't really been in the mix for the Clippers as they're a more competitive team. Don't have a lot of time to give minutes to rookies and second-year players. He was a projected second-round pick early on in the draft process, but shot up the draft boards, became a mid-first-round pick, and the second of consecutive first-round picks for the Clippers. They kind of surprised, even on draft night, made a little bit of a reach for Jerome Robinson. He's been disappointing, so his value is a little bit low, kind of like the Zaire Smith situation in reality for a guy who has disappointed so far as a first-round pick, but that's the kind of players that might be available here on the trade market for the Pistons, especially when talking to teams that want to be competitive this year and want to make deep playoff runs. And guys like Jerome Robinson, guys like Zaire Smith certainly aren't helping the Clippers and the 76ers respectively on those voyages this year. Also, Derek Walton Jr., a local guy out of Detroit, Michigan guy there. He's at the end of the bench for the Clippers, so good to have the Michigan Wolverines out there. Also fun to watch them. Cabin Galley was a guy that they got in the draft out of Florida State, the big center we talked about a little bit. Maybe the Pistons can make a deal for him. He's on assignment with the G League right now, but another name to remember for Pistons fans as you study the Clippers going into Thursday's game. But hey, that's going to do it for us here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, not just for this episode, but also for the year of 2019 and what a year it's been for the Pistons. But I joke, but it's been a great year for the Locked On Pistons podcast. Can't express to you guys enough about how much I appreciate you all, especially the gold and platinum listeners that respond and interact with me all through social media and email and all that good stuff. But spread the word. Let's have a good 2020, whatever year is coming up next. Let's rebuild this team. Let's get Detroit basketball back on the right path and build the Locked On Pistons podcast listening audience. And let's do it all together. This is your host, Matt Shook, of the Locked On Pistons podcast, saying happy freaking New Year, and we'll talk to you guys in 2020. Much love, everyone.